Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
As I said earlier, the quote of the day, or look, the quote of the week. My man of the year, Chris Smalls. We want to thank Jeff Bezos for going to space, because while he was up there, we were organizing a union, and yes, they won the election. And at Amazon there in Staten Island at the JFK 8 warehouse. I believed that they were going to win there. Because if you were going to win anywhere, it should have been there. Because the culture of New York, I believe, all of these should already be unionized. It shouldn't have taken this long and been this Herculean of a leap, in my view. Here to share some thoughts on, maybe I'm wrong, I've asked our good friend Sean Richmond to come talk with us. Sean is my go-to labor guy. He's a labor scholar, also a professor at SUNY Empire State College, contributing writer over at In These Times, and the author of the fabulous book, Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. Sean, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me. I gotta confess on the front end. Everybody's celebrating this thing. Everybody's gonna sort of retroactively change their narrative. I said nothing publicly, but privately, I didn't think they would win. I think the laws are too stacked against workers in these cases. The amount of resources that the company was bringing to bear, the horrible role that the cops on Staten Island played. And the fact that, they consciously went without having, the backing of an international union, all just sort of pointed to, another really close, but still like dispiriting loss. The win is massive and very encouraging and it has to cause a lot of soul searching within the labor movement about what they did right and what other unions are not doing right. Not to cast blame, but I do think that the organizing model as was developed in the Reagan era needs some revisiting, because times have clearly changed.
No, absolutely. But here's the thing. The model that they pursued is what I believe that you have to do. You have to be local. You have to be engaged. You have to build a community. You have to be on the ground. And they were part of that community. And as I said from the beginning, I thought they were going to do well, because if there's anywhere you're going to do well, it's got to be New York, because the culture is already that of a union kind of culture. Bessemer, Alabama, a little bit heavier of a lift, center of the country, probably a little bit, but in places where you already have a pretty sizable union density, I see you doing okay.
No. I mean, I live on Staten Island. No. I mean, yeah, no, you've got all kinds of union members who can just rationalize away why it makes sense in my case, but not for you. And again, I mean, the cops that were arresting Smalls outside of the facility are union members, and I have no shame about turning around and asking for solidarity whenever they feel like they're in a jam. Teachers and firefighters and any other unionized worker here, we all have our Amazon Prime membership, and a lot of people just, okay, easily buy into the boss arguments about how, that 2-day turnaround is important, and well, what if this slows it down? So no, that goes nowhere. There's no reason why workers in the deep south at Amazon couldn't win. In fact, there's all the more reasons why maybe they should win than around here, where it's we're big and we're establishment, but we tend not to be movement as much as our numbers belie.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that New York has what, about 24% union density? I think the last number I saw, somewhere in that range. The fact that you know union members, the fact that you see people who are in unions and their lives are better, that they get better wages, better conditions, that is an enticing thing. That if you're in a campaign, that the lies that the bosses are telling you, that you have examples around you, that you're going to go, oh, no, I don't believe that because I see something different. That's my point of view. Now,
yeah, except almost none of the union members that you're surrounded by, none of your neighbors, almost none of them actually had to fight for their union, right? And that's the key difference. You don't have that experience. So it gets back to your original point that this does seem to have been, from what I'm reading from what the workers are now putting out on Facebook and Twitter, this was a very worker-centered, one-on-one conversation, worker organizing committee, you know, talking to themselves. And this is like one of the things that we need to grapple with, right? Like, the boss campaign works because it's a campaign of intimidation and psyops and threats and retaliation. I mean, Smalls was fired, right?
Right.
But one of the things that makes it effective is the fear of the unknown. And so workers who have to go through this trial by fire to win this election, get to the bargaining table, and even then, there's long odds that you're going to win a contract, right? Like 50% of new units don't wind up with a new contract. You have to feel like it's worth it, and you have to feel like you're empowered within it. And that, I think, is one of the things that work to their advantage here, right? And this is a place where a lot of unions, I think, cut corners in the organizing conversation and in the organizing model. That there's a lot of conversations about what bargaining is going to look like. And even, you know, well, is it going to be a separate local or is it going to go into a local 2233, right? And it's like, oh, we'll figure that out later. It's like, no, the workers actually want some guarantees on the front end. They want to know that these decisions aren't going to get taken out of their hand. A prime example, one of the main things that bosses will hammer at in these captive audience meetings is, we're not going to give you anything. You're not going to win anything unless you go on strike, and the union can make you go on strike. And if you go on strike, we're going to fire you. Right. It's like, it's that rap. For a lot of people that the union is going to make you go on strike is scary. And this is, it's like a training issue for staff organizers, but it's such common sense that when you have an organizing committee and you empower them to be like, how are we going to make you go on strike? You're only going to go on strike if you all agree that a strike makes sense. Nobody can make you go on strike.
Right.
In the case of this independent Amazon labor union, right, they just turn to each other like, I can't make you go on strike. We only go on strike if we agree we're going to go on strike. Kills that message from the boss campaign.
Right.
And so there's a lot of messages in the boss campaign that were effectively killed by the fact that this was this worker-led independent movement. They didn't have to answer for anything else. They didn't have to explain where Jimmy Hoffa is buried, any of that nonsense that you get in any other campaign. Not that I want to draw the wrong lessons from that, but it is interesting that they won free and clear, and in Bessemer, you know, it's going to go down to the challenged ballots. It's going to go down to appeals, and it's going to drag out. I hope that the workers won in Bessemer as well, but it's less of a resounding victory as it was at JFK8.
Now, this is all part of what I've talked about for years, this idea of you know, the union being the center of the community, of being, you know, being a whole community in and of itself, and this is how they organized. That, you know, you relied on each other, that you did for, you didn't have someone come in and do for you, you did for yourself. And I think that's the important part of this. And you know, when I did some organizing, one of the things that they did hammer on is you've got to empower people to know that they were doing the organizing themselves. You were just there to help guide and facilitate and answer questions, not actually do anything for them. And I think this group, they did that. I think they did the right things.
They did it. I think that there is a badly needed conversation within the labor movement. I would dearly love to watch the AFL-CIO lead it, to revisit our organizing model, because every union tells their staff organizers that exact thing that they told you. But how many actually follow through on it? You know, to be incredibly fair, like, it's this terrifying thing. When you're a staff organizer, it takes years to get the kind of zen of like, well, it, at the end of the day, it is actually in the workers' hands. Like my job is just to give them the information they need. And like, why am I so afraid that if they see the same crazy charts on the wall that I have, if they see the same power maps, you know, if they understand the law as well as I do, why would they come to a drastically different conclusion than we have about what it's going to take to win? But at the end of the day, it doesn't happen way too often. Most union organizing campaigns are still very staff driven. Organizing committees are paper committees. You know, it's oh, I took 10 cards and I handed out to my coworkers. Great, you're a one. We're going to call you committee. But it's not a deeply meaningful organizing committee where like that committee has real veto power over go or no go points in the campaign. Are we going public tomorrow or not? Are we doing a public petition or are we doing cards? Are we marching on the boss? What time are we marching on the boss? Is it 10:30 a.m.? Is it 5 o'clock in the afternoon? And you know, it's a little bit frustrating, you know, that there's science on this. You know, Kate Bronfenbrenner has been doing research on this for 40 plus years about what it takes to win. You know, and one of the key things that she shows is that. A successful union campaign, you know, it's almost like I think it's like a 10% increase in the likelihood of winning if you build the bargaining campaign, the actual contract demands, and even electing the bargaining committee into the campaign before the union election vote happens. Instead of kicking the can down, it's like, oh, we'll figure that out later. Again, workers need to feel empowered in these campaigns, or else, you know, the entire point of the boss's campaign is to frustrate and to scare and to make you feel like it's hopeless and worthless and all that.
Well, yeah, because you got to know what you're fighting for. I mean, that makes perfect sense, because you got to know exactly what it is you're fighting for. That makes a lot of sense. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Sean Richmond. Sean's a labor scholar at SUNY Empire State College, contributing writer over at In These Times, and the author of the fabulous book, Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for the Workers of the 21st Century. We'll get links out on social media. I can pick up that fabulous book. But, you know, here's the thing. You mentioned, you alluded to it a little bit earlier about getting a contract. I had people going, hey, we won. Amazon's got a union. Well, they won the election. The contract is going to be a little bit more challenging because, as you pointed out, you know, a little, probably half to a little over half don't actually get contracts. How do you see this playing out?
All eyes have to be on this. And again, the fact that they're independent is a real gift to us, because this is going to play out in public in a way that most contract bargaining doesn't happen. And you know, because apparently they've got an attorney from some local OPU unit who's like doing this pro bono. They're doing this on their own.
Yeah, we've
the boss is going to refuse to bargain. The boss is absolutely going to refuse to bargain. They've already telegraphed that they're going to appeal. They're going to challenge the election. We should be very, very prepared for they will threaten or actually shut down JFK8. Because one of the things that Amazon has done, if you look at the way that they've sort of spread out across the country, they have saturated these centers, right? It kind of blows my mind that the center is called JFK8. It's on Staten Island. Meanwhile, Newark Airport is you know, a stone's throw away. Why isn't it EWR3? There's so many of these centers that they could easily close one, and it wouldn't affect the 2-day turnaround on packages. And we should fully expect that they're either going to threaten to or actually do it. All eyes have to be on this. This is what's going to reveal just how broken our labor law system is. And every politician that is tweeting their congratulations right now, there needs to be real repercussions for Amazon for any of their next steps that doesn't involve getting to the damn table and meeting with Smalls and a democratically elected committee of the workers at JFK8.
Now, this is where I go back to the Obama era. And I tell the story often of how, you know, twice I shook President Obama's hand, well, candidate Obama's hand, softest hands I've ever met, seen on a human being. If I had hands like that, I'd never leave the house. Told me twice, we were going to get something better than the Employee Free Choice Act, did not get anything. But had we gotten something that I believe was as weak as the Employee Free Choice Act, could have helped here, because it did have that that first contract arbitration part of it.
The hell with the Employee Free Choice Act. I think that the
But had we got it, just as weak as that was.
It would have done nothing. The new general counsel at the NLRB, Abruzzo, has a much better approach. There are so many things that are and always have been under the control of the NLRB that shame on us, the labor movement writ large, that we have not employed these board strategies earlier, right? Strike replacement. The brilliant idea of the AFL-CIO under Lane Kirkland in the first year of the Clinton administration was, well, let's legislatively fix the McKay Supreme Court decision that says if you go out on an economic strike, the boss can hire a bunch of scabs and they can permanently take your jobs. Cockamamie decision, made up whole cloth. And the entire time the NLRB has had the leeway to constrain that to the point where it's meaningless, because an employer is only allowed to permanently replace its workers on strike if they can prove that it's not in any way anti-union animus, and that it's not it is necessary to protect and continue their business. Okay, well, you're a multi-billion dollar corporation. How is replacing 500 workers necessary to protect and continue your business? Open up your books and prove it, please. Right. But the anti-union animus even is the NLRB has a very narrow definition of it now. It's only if there's a statutory unfair labor practice charge. But, you know, here in New York, you know, the cable company Spectrum, which was Time Warner Cable, new company bought it. They bought themselves a union. They bargained that union to impasse over draconian cuts, like goodbye pension, goodbye, you know, Buick level health insurance plan, and steep wage cuts. Forced them out on strike and quickly brought in a bunch of scabs. Don't tell me the goal there wasn't to bust the union. Don't tell me that they should not have been allowed to permanently replace those workers. The NLRB should have stepped in and said, no, you can hire replacements. Sure, you can hire scabs, but they can't permanently replace them. You're not allowed to do that. And so there's a lot of ways in which the general counsel is weighing in here. And I think that this JFK 8 is going to be really a testing ground for a lot of the things that this general counsel wants to do. We might get real bargaining orders out of here. Smalls's termination, you know, they want at the moment statutorily, the law says that if you're fired for union activity, basically you get your job back and that you're entitled to the money that you should have been paid minus what you made doing anything else in the interim. Correct. That's all you get. This general counsel wants to broadly expand the make whole remedy so that anything else that, you know, we have lives here. If you're not getting a paycheck, you might miss a mortgage payment. You might get foreclosed upon. You might miss a car payment. You might lose your car. That starts to get calculated in to what the boss owes you. Because at the end of the day, the only way we're going to stop bosses from breaking the law is if it costs them. And it costs them nothing at the moment. It costs them less than nothing. It's almost, there are lawyers out there who say that you're basically practicing malpractice if you don't tell your client, well, break the law. There's no financial... Yeah. You know, it's going to cost you more to follow the law. And I'm doing a disservice to you as your attorney if I tell you to follow this law like a Boy Scout or something.
No, so that's where we should be paying our attention. And look, I love the fact that she's there and some of the things that she's brought up, you know, like the Joy Silk doctrine that, you know, most people haven't even, you know, thought of in decades.
I didn't even think about it in my book. You look at the index. There's no Joy Silk. It wasn't even on my head. It's like, oh, great. Good idea. Forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this is where, you know, for years I've been saying, how come we can't? Now, fortunately, moving in a more in a direction. And I think it's going to come back to you. So last question I've got, because you've got a new leadership of the Teamsters who have, you know, they've said we're going to organize Amazon. You've got the RSDWU. They're hell-bent on organizing Amazon. What lessons, real quick, what lessons should they take from this?
I think unions have to be way more open to chartering brand new local unions. You have to, when you're taking on a large employer like this, or even a small employer, you have to give these workers some guarantee of democratic autonomy so that they're willing to go through that trial by fire. And I think that's a critical mistake that we've made starting in the 1960s. We tried to capture all of the revenue that goes to local unions. We tried to get local unions to match the international union, put a bunch of money in the pot. And it's like, oh, let's organize Amazon into, you know, local. I'm not going to give numbers here. I'm terribly tempted to, but local unions have a job, and that's basically to deliver the goods for their existing members, to get good successor agreements to their existing contracts, and for the local leaders to get elected to the membership that they know and that knows them. You got to clean the slate there. Nobody is going to, no international union, RWDSU, Teamsters, UAW, if they decide that the A stands for Amazon, nobody's going to organize Amazon without guaranteeing the workers a significant degree of democratic autonomy. That, I think, means each facility needs its own local, and that there needs to be some sort of bargaining council structure. And they need to know that they're choosing the bargaining reps, and that they get to decide, you know, all the steps that go along to ULPs and strikes and everything else. I'm afraid that might be a heavy lift. And again, that's why I think that we badly need a revisit of the organizing model conversations that took place under Sweeney in the mid 1990s. You know, there was a big push there where every labor center, all, you know, colleges were involved, all these scholars were involved. You know, Sweeney invited all these people that got cast out from the House of Labor, all these left-wing dissidents. It was a great moment. I was a kid, I missed it. But there was a real sort of like, let's put it all on the table and there's no sacred cows. And then we just sort of, this is the plan, and we've sort of stuck with it almost in a zombie state. And that was a different century ago. It's time to do that again.
Yeah, it's time to take advantage of this moment of people and the anger that they have, and the want to organize and move forward. At least I'm hoping. But Sean, I appreciate the thoughts. Great stuff.
All right. Thanks for having me. Take care.
I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Tell us what you think. Is this the future? Will we see another Amazon victory? I think this is an incredible moment. I think there's an opportunity for, as Sean pointed out, you know, local individual places to do what Chris Smalls and those folks in Staten Island did. In their local workplace, in their spot, organize together and create something there. I think Sean's right. I think it's going to be a heavier lift to get them to adhere to the old model. I do think it's going to be a struggle, and for the new Teamster leadership coming in, you know, we had the last administration's guy on the Randy, I think his name was Randy Corrigan, and he had an idea that, you know, we're gonna organize Amazon, and they had a path that they wanted to follow, and it was a lot of peer to peer stuff, and that sounded great, but it seems still like a top down. I think, you know, what the stories that we heard coming out of Staten Island was, look, these were the workers who were doing it themselves, and they weren't being directed so much. I'm in a Twitter room with some of the people who are working on this, and you saw some of the conversations. You saw some of the direction. But good on them. But like you said, it's going to be interesting to watch how the contract negotiations goes on, and if they get that first contract. Because they won today, they won and Amazon is going to fight this at every step of the way. Whether they get that first contract, that's going to be the bellwether. Love to hear your thoughts, though. You can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. If you've missed any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast. Always available, always there, wherever you get your podcast, from iTunes to iHeart, Podbean to Stitcher, and everywhere in between. Always there. Make sure you share it with your friends, coworkers, even those that, not so fond of. Maybe they'll learn something. Also, follow us on social media, Twitter, at Rick Smith Show, Facebook, YouTube, like, share, subscribe. Absolutely subscribe. Never miss a moment. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.